Welcome to the To Faithful Men podcast. This project started in 2006 to preserve old sermon and study tapes of Wiley Flanagan, Hassel Wallace, and Mike Strebel. 2 Timothy 2:2 says, "And the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men, who shall be able to teach others also."
Now there's something else that I believe that a person ought to have some idea about before he studies the book of Revelation. And that's the historical background from emperor standpoint. What time did the writer live? Rome was certainly in power. Of course, Rome was reigning when Jesus was born, you see. And this will indicate that it was during the times of persecution. Even John being on the Isle of Patmos, it may not show what crime he committed, how severe or how severe his punishment, but at least he was at least on the Isle of Patmos. Now, some interpret that he was there for preaching the gospel, that he went over in order to preach the gospel on the Isle of Patmos. Some say he went over there in order to receive the revelation from God. But now you got to have a warped mind to believe that, because the way the scriptures present it is that he was there because he had been faithful to God. He had been preaching the gospel, see? And for the witness, the testimony of God. For the testimony and the witness that he had already given. He didn't go out on a barren island to receive this revelation. He went there because there was some persecution. All right, we know that there was some persecution because Antipas, a faithful brother, had been martyred. See, we find that the first two chapters in the church letters. All right? Then, and not on that, but others were warned in the third chapter of imprisonment. 2:10 and 3:10. Revelation 2:10 and 3:10. They warn of imprisonment, warn of being martyred. And each one of them is talking about he that overcome. There was tribulation. There was persecution going on. How severe? We don't know. But and then the churches. It was late enough in history for the churches to depart from their first love and faithfulness. Ephesus, the one thing against them. Oh, there's a lot of commendable things said about Ephesus. See, but the one thing against them was leaving their first love. Well, now you can't put someone writing this letter admitting that they, at one time, they were zealous and full of vim and vigor and fire for the Lord and had a zealous spirit and attitude. If you can't put write and say, well, now, during the time they were that way, you had to wait to let love kind of die down. See, you got a little cold, a little neglected one another, see, and neglected love toward God. So those are just little waymarks from the book itself to show you that it was a late period. All right, well, how late? There were only really two men that really persecuted the Christians in the up to Domitian's time, and that was Nero and Domitian. Well, Nero, we take note of him because a lot of people say it was written in his time. Well, Nero came to power when he was 17 years old. His mother had his father, Claudius, put to death. And then 5 years later, Nero had his mother murdered. And then immediately took his young wife, Octavia, and had her executed, charging her with adultery. And then he married Poppaea, his mistress. And then it wasn't long until Nero personally, with his big brogan, kicked her to death. Put her to death by using a shoe on it. Well, Now, Nero then, when the city burned, the whisper got out, the rumor got out that he's the one that did it. See? And he did do it. The purpose, and no, I mean, is, no doubt about it. And because he wanted to rebuild Rome, that was the only reason. He wanted to modernize. He was a great builder. He was an architect. He wanted to build it. And so, he burnt the thing, and while it was burning, he was fiddling and singing, you know, about the song of Troy, the burning of Troy. Well, but this brought a very unhealthy reaction in the army and among the citizenship, and the army turned against Nero, and they sought to capture him, arrest him, but before they could arrest him, he didn't like Hitler. He committed suicide. And then the tale got out. And now I'm just now getting to the point what might affect Revelation. The tale got out. Well, he just escaped. He run. They didn't believe that he was killed. And they said he escaped and went to Persia. And nobody would believe it. And they said, well, now he's coming back. The ones that still believed in Nero. Oh, he'll come back. He'll come back and he'll put an end to his enemies. And then after time went along to prove that Nero was dead, that he couldn't be living this time of the year, these many years, so they said, well, he's dead, but he's going to rise again. He's going to come forth from the grave. And they went everywhere preaching that. And the Sibylline Articles, this apocalyptic literature, writes about, tells about how he's going to come with Persia, from Persia, with a great army, and come into Rome. All right? There are those that take Revelation 17 and say, which was, which is, see, and which is to come. The beast that was, is not, and yet is. See? There are those that say, well, now, Revelation is belongs to that literature because there he is. Look at that. That writer believes in the myth of Nero being raised from dead. All right, now, Revelation can be true without that referring to Nero. There's no reference to it. There's not one reference in the book of Revelation to any known apocalyptic piece of writing, book. The book of Revelation abounds in just casual references to the book of Daniel in the Old Testament, as though that the reader of the book of Revelation is familiar with Daniel, familiar with Ezekiel, familiar with Isaiah and Jeremiah. He doesn't prove, now talk about the theme of this book of Revelation. Behold, he cometh. Behold, he cometh with clouds. Where does that go back to? Daniel 7, 13, 14. See, and they're just reference after reference. But I was giving you background here with reference to Nero. All right, Nero did like to be, you know, considered very worthy. He liked to be considered a god. Even his coins was all right for him. But Domitian, who he passed away, Nero's reign ended in about 69 A.D. But Domitian was in somewhere around 96 A.D. So, but by the time Domitian came on the scene, he taught everybody and all the citizens, all the Roman citizens, call him Lord and God. Worthy art thou was one of his favorite respects. All right, now that expression occurs in Revelation. Worthy art thou, see? Worthy art thou to take the book, to open it, break the seals, see? Worthy art thou, why? Because thou wast slain. You see? All right, and Domitian, when his wife went with him to any public place, they had to address him, our Lord and Lady, see? And so they they had Domitian demanded worship. He required worship. But now, in the meantime, over in Asia Minor, even under Nero, in Asia Minor, the people where these churches are located, the people had already started worshiping Rome, not the emperor, but Rome. Because they felt, that is, their worship was in the form of gratitude. They were so grateful for Rome. They had given them so much. They was keeping them alive. In other words, the Asia Minor was the first WPA relief role. They got it from Rome, and they liked what they got. And they just wanted to show their appreciation, and they started building temples all over Asia Minor. Ephesus was a city of emperor worship. They built temples there to worship the Emperor of Rome. And but they didn't, the Emperor of Rome didn't demand that worship. He liked it, yes. Domitian especially, see. But it was only until Domitian that it was forced. And then the people that didn't worship over there, well, they marked them pretty well, you know. And if they give them much trouble, well, they thought they were being loyal to God because Rome was their God. Then their affection and their worship changed from the state to the emperor, to the man himself, see? And, alright, now what do you have? You in the book of Daniel, you have a image. This gold, silver, brass, and iron and clay. And you have a picture there that, of this emperor. Nebuchadnezzar saying now, at the sound of the music, you fall down and worship. See? Alright. Well, in the book of Revelation, you've got chapter 13, where you have the same requirements. And that this beast out of the sea, the Antichrist, this, and last time I forgot it, I regret that I didn't include 2 Thessalonians 2 in there. With reference to the man of sin, it just slipped my mind because I wanted to present those articles. But anyway, this is the same man. This is a man that's going to rise, and he's a political leader, but he's also satanically inspired. He's religious. He's greedy to rule the religious realm. And he's got an assistant there called the false prophet. He's just a henchman. He just does whatever this beast wants him to do, see? And then this beast, this false prophet, builds a great image, you know, to this beast. And he has power to call down fire from heaven. Makes the image talk. Boy, he can really put on demonstration. And he does it. All right? Now, so now that's in history. What I'm trying to show you is that behind the writing of this book, to people that had experience with this type of living, this type of emperors, and seeing this worship of empire, and then a worship of the leader of that empire, that dictator, see? And then when you get a message like the book of Revelation, well, who are you going to say is the beast? See, who would you say would be the Antichrist? Oh, man, you couldn't convince me that there wasn't a person living in those days that didn't believe that the Antichrist was the Nero or the Domitian or any of the other emperors that succeeded. Whatever time they were living in, when they would read this, or they'd put that to the old to the emperor. And then when paganism was wiped away and then was superseded by papal Rome, then the people living under papal Rome would see in that the papacy as the beast. And Rome, the empire in which he ruled, would be the false prophet. Or Asia Minor over here, which Asia Minor was, oh, whatever Rome did, Asia Minor would outdo it. They'd run over one another trying to be loyal to Rome. See? And so that's why we have seven churches. We have this book. I mean, from a human standpoint, see, addressed to the seven churches. All right, now, if you were going to deliver this book to these seven churches in Asia Minor, you'd start with Ephesus, and you'd go up and around, and you'd come back. It'd be just about like an egg shape. It'd be almost a circle. All right, if you're going to believe in symbols and signs, all right, there's a circle, perfect circle, see? That's a unit. All right, the seven of them, all right, that's a complete number. But there was Hierapolis over there. There's the Church of Colossae. There was maybe a church at Troas. I don't know. Could have been. But we know that there were some letters written to two other churches within 50 years of these, and they might have been in existence then. We don't know. But anyway, he wrote to these seven churches. All right. Now then, there's no such thing as the church in the book of Revelation. There's no such thing anywhere in the Bible as the church so-and-so, or referring to God's people, the church. Now, the churches as an institution are referred to in Matthew 16 when Jesus said, "Upon this rock I'll build my church." That's an institution of churches, but there's no such thing as a noun, a sum total, an aggregate number, making up at any one time the church of God. The true church, as you read it, when you read dispensational literature, and also much premillennial literature, and all millennial too, they refer to the church as though that it includes every saved person, see. But now Jesus used the word, and he's the, in this book, and he's the only one that did use it. Not one time is there any reference to any number outside of assembly over in Ephesus, or Smyrna, or Thyatira, Pergamos, or Thyatira, or Sardis, or Philadelphia, or Laodicea. Now, I find that a good way to remember these names, if you want to remember them easily and quickly, ESP, TSP, and then the last one's Laodicea. Okay? ESP, Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos. TSP, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia. Laodicea. ESP, TSP, that's all. And then you've got them. You won't forget them.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe and share with a friend. Be steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. For as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord.